Welcome back to another edition of the Pennsylvania Prisons and Parole Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Tarkowski. Today, we'll continue our trip around the Commonwealth to learn about the history of each of our 24 state correctional institutions. A bit later in the show, we'll visit with Cambridge Springs native and local historian David Matejczyk to learn about that facility and how it evolved from a hotel to a college, and then finally, a women's prison. And we'll also find out how the National Football League is connected to SCI Cambridge Springs. But first, we'll check in with Lisa Hollibaugh, superintendent's assistant at one of our most unique facilities, SCI Smithfield. SCI Smithfield is the DOC's reception facility, which means that any man entering our facility since March 2020 started their time there. So SCI Smithfield has a unique mission as a reception facility. Can you tell us what that means?
So, when COVID hit in 2020, and we quickly began a transition from a regular facility to a reception facility in a matter of a few months. So in January 2021, we began receiving parole violators and new commitments from the counties. And we tested them numerous times during the course of their confinement here, which was 21 to 28 days. They went to, a quarantine unit or an isolation unit, dependent upon their status at the time. They came out of their cells in two-man cohorts at the time for about 40 minutes for shower and phone. They didn't have access to gym, yard visits, library, things like that. We do have about 200 permanent inmates here, but the most of our inmates are transient inmates. But that was then, and then we transitioned to now, as the virus has evolved and, we know more about the virus, the vaccines and such. So, we've evolved with it. So, inmates are here. They're still here for about 21 to 28 days. We only test them one time. When they come in, they now get, they're not in their cell for the amount of time they were before. They're allowed out for blockout now a couple times a day by tier. So we do sort of quarantine them still by tier. Phones and showers. So, and if there's any sort of, rise in numbers, which there hasn't been for a while, they would, even though we would pull back on that. But
so what you're saying is no matter where somebody is going to end up as a permanent home location, whether it's, SCI Waymart in the Northeast or SCI Albion in the Northwest, everybody comes to SCI Smithfield first.
That's correct. Yep.
Are there any physical differences in your facility given its unique mission as opposed to maybe a prototypical facility or different cells, a different layout?
It's all our same existing cells. Like I said, most of our housing units are quarantine units. We have a block and a half that's our regular general population that stay here. There aren't inmate workers. But, in this, we became the reception facility. We had a large CI plant, which was converted to a reception facility in a very short amount of time. But, you get down there, it runs like a well-oiled machine. There's medical psych where they issued clothing doing their property. So that was the main structural thing that changed while we were here.
So what's it like? As a reception facility, what's an inmate's first day at SCI Smithfield like? Can you walk us through what that might be?
Sure. They come in through our reception unit. Medical sees them. Psychology sees them. They're seen by our reception committee where they go over, their criminal history. We determine where their best housing would be, and they then are just taken to their quarantine unit, and they're generally they're housed with the people they come in with. So then they just go to their housing unit. But the first day is a processing day. It's a pretty long day for them.
As superintendent's assistant, I'd imagine you get a lot of questions, inquiries from family members and loved ones who might be new to the DOC system, just like their incarcerated loved one is. What do you want them to know about anything? Visitation, adding money to commissary, anything else?
A lot of, we do. And, as a mother, I'm always sort of got a special place in my heart for the moms that call and they're concerned about, somebody might just came off the street or, a new commitment to the facility from the county. So inmates here, they don't get access to visits. When they come in, they do get one phone call, to the family or to whomever they desire to call. But, And then they have to submit a phone list. So it may be a slight delay from that first phone call, about 2 weeks until they get their phone list submitted and approved. So that there. So oftentimes when families don't hear from their loved one here, you know, they start to get worried and concerned something's wrong. So that would be, that's probably the biggest question I get.
Does security kind of verify those phone lists and they make sure that everything's on the up and up, right?
Yes, and you know, we're getting you know, a lot of inmates in at a time, so that it is a process because all the inmates are submitting them at the same time.
Is video visits available?
Video visits are not available for our quarantine inmates, no, because it's a long process to get that, and by the time we would have that done, they would be moving on.
Okay, so you have video visits and regular visitation for that small number of permanent population you have, but not for the quarantine population.
That's correct.
Is there anything else that family members should know about their loved one's time at Smithfield?
When inmates do come in, we give them a fact sheet for them to mail home. A lot of inmates don't do that. I wish more did because it has a lot of information on there for that. But, you know, family friends can always visit the DOC's public website where they can see how to put money on an account or, you know, for the Securus so they can make phone calls, things like that.
What property are inmates issued at Smithfield? Is it a certain number of uniforms? What do they get?
They get their basic issue, which is their clothing, you know, toothbrush, deodorant, you know, health care, hygiene items. They have a small amount of property. Obviously, inmates come in off the street from parole violators, you know, their personal clothing, their, you know, wallets, those get shipped out back home or to an address of their choosing. But for the most part, it's pretty basic, you know, hygiene items, you know, their clothing until they move on to the next facility.
After their initial quarantine that you mentioned, what's the next step on the process? Where do they go after Smithfield?
Generally, it's SCI Camp Hill. Sometimes it's other facilities, but for the most part, it's SCI Camp Hill to go down there for diagnostics.
So your first, the mission of SCI Smithfield is just to make sure everybody is safe and processed effectively, right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, our main mission then and now is to, you know, we're mitigating the spread of COVID throughout the facility.
And I'm sure it works for other contagions as well, right? Not just COVID. It's probably good for anything that somebody can come in off the street for them, because especially with parole violators that are coming in, like you said, off the street, that quarantine is probably very helpful in mitigating the spread of anything that's contagious.
It is. And for our parole violators that, you know, come in and may be addicted to a substance, they do go through a detox process. So, you know, those inmates have another level of medical attention that they get.
So when folks hear the name reception facility or quarantine, that kind of connotes being locked in a little room without a lot of freedom of movement. And I know maybe during the height of COVID-19 pre-vaccine time, maybe that was more of the case, but how does SCI Smithfield keep the incarcerated population, the folks that are there for only a short time, engaged and active?
So, you know, because of our mission, we've found that inmate idleness is obviously one of our largest challenges. So to keep them busy, you know, and engaged because they are quarantined, they don't have access to, you know, commissary. They can't go to the gym, the library, things like that that our normal population can go to. But, you know, the Inmate General Welfare Fund purchased TVs for every cell as well as cable, free cable. They have a dedicated channel where they can receive information and updates. Religious programming is played over there, as well as the recreation department developed activities for them to stay busy, such as bingo. They developed workout programs so they can work out in their cell. And then because they don't have commissary, our dietary department was given the green light to go ahead, and we've given them extra starches, and, you know, potatoes, and they can get an extra slice of pizza, peanut butter and jelly. We give them a snack in the evening. Those are things that our general population inmates don't get. So that's just, those are just some of the ways that we have tried to keep them engaged and busy, and, you know, some extra food to keep them full and happy.
And I think the message here is that the quarantine is all about safety. It's not a punitive measure. It's not a punishment. It's just something that we're doing to keep everybody as safe as possible and kind of prevent the spread of anything that might come into our system off the street.
That's correct.
What do you want listeners to know about the staff at SCI Smithfield?
The staff. Oh, gee, I just started my 30 years, so this is my 31st year I'm working on here. So this has been, you know, basically the only place that I've ever worked pretty much my whole life. So, you know, I've always enjoyed the staff. It's a great atmosphere. And, you know, culture and ethics has started from the top. And we have a wonderful administrative team, very supportive.
How does SCI Smithfield give back to the community? You mentioned it's kind of right in the heart of Huntington County there. I know probably one of the larger employers in the area. What are some of the ways that staff and maybe even the permanent inmate population give back?
So our inmates, prior to our mission, did many fundraising events for, like, Big Brothers Big Sisters, the American Cancer Society. But, you know, we obviously, because of our mission, we don't do that now. But as far as staff, we certainly keep those food trucks here. They keep busy in our community. We have lots of food trucks here at the Smithfield. But as far as our community, you know, we do have good community relations. The youth forestry camp, which houses juvenile offenders, they do come in and visit with our inmates every so often. So, you know, that's always helpful.
SCI Smithfield first opened its doors in 1988, then expanded in 91, and then again a little bit in 94. To me, 1988, because I'm an old guy, doesn't sound like it was that long ago, but we're, you know, that's 40, almost 40 years ago now. Have there been any infamous, notorious inmates make their way through?
So I did some research on this, and, you know, obviously we have had a lot of inmates followed by, like, true crime, FBI cold cases, America's Most Wanted, but we have had a few inmates that, you know, stick out. So we housed Frank Fletcher. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but he was one of the biggest boxers in the 80s. He was nicknamed the Animal. He was from Philadelphia, and he was named the United States Boxing Association middleweight champion. So, you know, he was, you know, I remember him. I grew up in my father watched boxing. I had to watch it all the time. So I remember him specifically. We had another inmate by the name of Colin Ray, who's TikTok famous. I looked him up yesterday. He has 2.7 million followers, so, you know, pretty significant. We did have some infamous inmates for their crimes. We did house the James Cruz, who was the I-80 killer. That garnered national attention. And we also housed an inmate who escaped from SCI Greater for many, many years ago. And he was found 25 years later when
wow.
He was premiered on America's Most Wanted. So America's Most Wanted brought him back to us. So he was hiding.
Oh, I remember that show.
Yeah.
So it actually worked.
Mm-hmm. It did work. We got him back. And then we have the youngest serial killer in Pennsylvania, which was Harvey Robinson.
Good chance to kind of pull back the curtain. A lot of folks, they read about these stories in the news, and then after the fugitives are captured or the court cases are over, these men and women go to prison, and a lot of people don't hear from them again, but the folks like Lisa Hollibaugh and her team at SCI Smithfield, they're working with them every day. Lisa, thank you for joining us on the Pennsylvania Prisons and Parole podcast today, and we'll do it again soon. Thanks again to Lisa Hollibaugh at SCI Smithfield. Now let's head out west to Crawford County and hear from David Matejczyk at SCI Cambridge Springs. So I think a lot of people might know that SCI Cambridge Springs got its start as a college, but they probably don't know the details behind that. Can you tell me about the Polish National Alliance College?
Sure. Where the SCI grounds are, from 1912 till the college's closing and sale to the state, it was the home of Alliance College. Alliance, it was the only Polish college in the United States. The college was opened in 1912 by the PNA and operated there for several years.
Why did it start as the Polish National Alliance College? Is there a big Polish contingent in that part of the state?
No, actually there wasn't until 1912. Cambridge Springs is located exactly 500 miles from Chicago, 500 miles from New York on the train line, and there were significant Polish populations in both of those cities. So when they had their convention, actually it was in Wilkes-Barre, to decide where to put the college at, why not pick it where no one wants it, right in the middle? All kidding aside, it was a great decision because it's a beautiful campus. And the Ryder Hotel, which was just an incredible facility, was there. It was available, and that's why it started there.
So they started as the Polish National Alliance College, so PNA for short, right?
Right. And then it basically became Alliance College.
Alliance College. And then it became a U.S. Army training center.
Are you talking about the first time? Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. World War I broke out, and the United States government actually had trained mechanics there, but there was an interesting little twist. When the war broke out, there were several able-bodied Polish immigrants that wanted to be involved with the war. They didn't speak English, but the thought was, what do we do with all of these able-bodied men? And the really an interesting pact between the United States and the Allies is that the troops would train at Niagara-on-the-Lake in Canada, and the officers would train in Cambridge Springs, actually on the grounds that are now the SCI campus.
And how long did that last?
Until the end of the war. I think they trained about 400 or 500 officers, and when the war ended, that was the end of the camp there. But the college moved on. Some real interesting things happened in that immediate time period. You had President of the United States visited what is the campus to dedicate it in 1912. And then in later years, the Prime Minister of Poland, Ignacy Paderewski, also came to the college. And through the years, they had quite a few important figures. If you were a Polish American of any note, congressman, senator from industry, you can count at least one or two visits. And some of them are actually our alums.
And Alliance College maybe started out for Polish immigrants, but it became a traditional liberal arts co-ed college.
It did. And if you look at Crawford County, that is the heart of the tool and die industry. And that became natural. I mean, Alliance was ahead of its time. They had a technical school for 2 years teaching machine shops, automotive, electronics. And obviously, those are great careers. So the school, when the school closed, those programs were still the strongest.
We're chatting with David Batechik. He's a Cambridge Springs native who had family at the school.
Yes. My father taught there for over 40 years. He was a physics professor. I had another relative. His cousin was the president of the school.
And now we've been for all that time at the school. Can you tell us, does the former SCI Cambridge Springs, does it have any famous alumni?
Several, actually, though, I think probably if you had to look at it, one of our most famous alums actually came to Alliance a strange way. His name is Frank Jarecki, and this is in communist times. He was a young pilot behind the Iron Curtain flying a Russian MiG in formation, and he broke formation, defected to the West with a real prize, a MiG fighter for everybody. And they didn't know what to do with him. And of course, he was swept off to Washington, met with the president, and they decided, guess what? We have just the place for you. And they sent him to Alliance College. So I would say he's probably one of our more famous alums.
That's awesome. Risking all of that to win a trip to beautiful Pennsylvania.
That's right.
All expenses paid. That's great. Even today on the grounds of SCI Cambridge Springs, there's still some traces of Alliance College, right?
Very much so. And, you know, when I was there last year, it made me feel good to see what they've done with the facility and how they've really kept the use of the buildings. But the administration building, Washington Hall, and that's where Superintendent, her office is, Michelle Overmeyer and Amy, that building at one time house the largest collection of Polish periodicals outside of Poland. 35,000 cataloged, 15 uncataloged. It was a repository for not only literature, but Polish films, Polish artwork. And when the college closed, that was all meticulously packed, labeled, and it is its own separate room and wing at the University of Pittsburgh now.
Why did all that literature leave Poland to begin with? Was it because of the war?
Sure. Some of it came that way, but a lot of it would be just items that would have been donated. A lot of it was related also to Polish-American, Polonia, we call it. But there was just donations that they had through the years.
So I want to shift gears just a little bit, if I can, talk about football for a minute. when I think of NFL training facilities, I think of, you know, multi-million dollar, top-of-the-line equipment. Anything you need is all within arm's reach. But the grounds of current day SCI Cambridge Springs has a connection to football.
They sure do. And actually, three NFL teams. How's that? The college was the training ground for the Pittsburgh Steelers in the late 40s and into the 50s. In addition, when they first put the San Francisco 49ers and the LA Rams into the NFL, they needed a place on the East Coast. Back then it was for trains. So they used the campus also as their base. But back to the Steelers, the current laundry facility at SCI Cambridge Springs, it's pretty historic. It used to be the Pittsburgh Steelers locker room. And at one time there was a dedication plaque above it in honor of Steelers coach Jock Sutherland. The field itself is now part of your exercise yards.
How did it become property, or it's not really property, the Department of Corrections, property, Department of General Services, and then the Department of Corrections uses it. But how did it go from a college to a prison?
Sure. And that was a sad time for a lot of us. Alliance was a victim of low enrollments. And when the college, when we got into the 1980s, enrollments were down, expenses were up, and there was a decision to cease operations. And all of a sudden you had this facility that was there with dormitories, a gymnasium, educational buildings, and the state came in and said, hey, this would make a great location. So that's when the transfer took place.
It's interesting because a few years after that, in the 1990s, that's when you saw the rise of what they call prototypical prisons, where they all kind of look the same. They've got the same look and feel. The housing blocks are all set up the same. But SCI Cambridge Springs is very unique.
It is very unique. There's a fence, obviously, around it, but the aesthetics of the campus are still pretty much the same. What kind of I found really interesting, Curie Hall is in the center of the campus. That was a state-of-the-art facility when it was built, with labs, classrooms, planetarium, and it is now still used for that, only instead of educating college students, the state's educating inmates in that facility.
What do you find is the most interesting thing about Alliance College and its transition to SCI Cambridge Springs?
I would have to say that would be it, in that part of the facility is still being used the way it had been used for several years. Find that the most interesting. Also, you've got a great staff up there. And when I did my program, I wasn't sure to expect when I said, who's familiar with the college? And there were so many that either had relatives that had gone to Alliance, or now we're down second, third generation. And they all had something about, oh, we found this or that through the years. I actually had a maintenance person show me a boring from when they were putting new flooring in from the Steelers field house. The remnants of the school are still there. And
didn't they find an indoor swimming pool somewhere?
I'll tell you what they did do. And that's something I really never knew about. I thought I knew all Alliance history, but the Ryder Hotel, it was an incredible facility. It had an indoor swimming pool, one of the earlier ones really in the country. And when they were putting a, this was relayed to me by Amy Boylan and Michelle, when they were putting the parking lot in and excavating, they came across tile from that original structure from the 1800s. And that's in a nice frame and matted as you come into your administration building there.
Jumping around here a little bit, but you've referenced the Ryder Hotel. We kind of started our conversation with Alliance College, but before that, it was this hotel.
It was an incredible hotel. It was one of the largest structures between New York and Chicago. It had an indoor gymnasium, a ballroom, two dining rooms, just everything. And that place had housed governors, came to visit, people in industry, and actually at one time it also hosted the World Championship, Chess Championship. The Ryder Hotel, though, like many of the inns in Cambridge Springs, they were there for the water, but there was a change in what you could label was medicinal. Originally, they said it cured everything, and then it was like, time out, drinking water.
Yeah, that's back in the day of magic elixirs, right? They're not as much right. Oversight as we have now.
That's right. And when that all started being debunked, a lot of the inns started to go by the wayside. So the Ryder Hotel was the largest, and that's when it became part of a college.
It's very interesting how I'm these are the days before before I-76, I guess, and the way that travel patterns have really influenced economies and locations like that. What are the big takeaways in the Cambridge Springs community? How do they interact? How did they interact with the college? How do they interact now with the prison? As a longtime, family resident of the area, how do you guys all get along together?
The relationships has been wonderful from the days of the college, and I'm assuming also, yes, they're good neighbors now to the community. I think everyone would say that. Kind of interesting, but when the Ryder Hotel burned down in 1931, all of a sudden you had all these students without a place. They were all displaced. The community came forward and they housed students in their homes. The churches in Cambridge Springs became classrooms. They opened up their arms. So when the college was able to get temporary buildings going, the information came back. Thank you to Cambridge Springs. Alliance College did not lose a single student after the fire. So that relationship has been through the years. And actually a lot of people in Cambridge Springs now trace roots or were graduates of Alliance. They came and they never left.
David Matejczyk, Cambridge Springs native and SEI Cambridge Springs expert, thank you for joining us today.
It was a pleasure, Ryan. Thank you.
We appreciate David and Lisa for pulling back the curtain on two more DOC facilities, and we'll do it again next month. In the meantime, for more information on the happenings at any DOC facility, visit our blog at cor.pa.gov and click on the tag for any SEI to see those posts. And you can always follow us on social media. We're at CorrectionsPA on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. On behalf of executive producer Kurt Bope, thank you for listening to the Pennsylvania Prisons and Parole Podcast. Until next time.